Welcome to the REORC Primary Review, where we cover the latest developments in high yield, distressed debt, and bankruptcy, and feature discussions on issues affecting distressed debt, leverage finance, direct lending, high yield bonds, high yield municipals, covenants, private credit, and middle market companies. I'm David Zupkis. This week, REORC's Dia Gill joins Cynthia Romano, Senior Managing Director at FTI, for a broad-ranging discussion that includes the economy's resilience in the face of dire predictions, unique restructuring challenges facing the healthcare, commercial real estate, and cannabis industries, recent trends in liability management, and how FTI is working to diversify its portfolio of service offerings. Due to the Easter holiday, we're taking a short hiatus from our weekly summary of interesting developments in the restructuring world and our week-ahead preview, but the full featured podcast will be back next week. We'd love to hear your feedback to help us improve the podcast experience, so please take a moment to complete the short survey at the link attached to this podcast and let us know how we're doing. It's Monday, April 1st.
Welcome back to another episode of the REORC Primary View podcast, where we bring you informed insights on critical issues in the leveraged finance and distressed markets. My name is Dia Gill, distressed debt reporter at REORC, and I'm pleased to have with me Cynthia Romano of FTI Consulting to discuss the restructuring market and outlooks for 2024. Cynthia is a senior managing director at FTI Consulting. She has 30 years of experience in profit enhancement, turnaround management, transaction support, and investment analysis. And her work has spanned multiple sectors, including healthcare, real estate, technology, and professional services. Her prior roles include technology entrepreneur, founder and CEO of her own turnaround firm, and global director of performance improvement and restructuring at a top 10 advisory and accounting firm. Cynthia is the recipient of numerous awards for outstanding work and has numerous board seats, panels, and publications to her credit. She holds degrees from Brown University, MIT, and is a TMA certified turnaround professional. Welcome, Cynthia, to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Dia, to you and REORC. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. And then to start us off with a broad view of the market, predictions about where we'd be now in the restructuring cycle were pretty dire 2 years ago. However, despite leading indicators like inflation and high interest rates telling us that we should be worse off, we're seeing a lot of people renege on their earlier predictions. From your view of the market and specifically the restructuring space, how far off are we from the predictions of a recession? And what would you credit as the factors that are keeping the market, but more specifically, highly levered companies propped up?
In 2022, both at the beginning and midway through the year, the predictions were fairly dire. Geopolitical uncertainty from the war in Europe, Eastern Europe was raging. Inflation had averaged 7% in 2021 and by mid-2022 hit 9.1%. Supply chains were still in crisis. Labor was extremely tight. Wages were rising and there were shortages for companies looking to fill open positions. And I think we all remember in mid-2022 when Jamie Dimon said, brace yourself for an economic hurricane. At that point, it seemed to me that while the leading indicators were all fairly poor, there was one indicator that a lot of people weren't speaking about, and that was the tremendous amount of dry powder that had been accumulated starting with COVID and moving into the beginning of the post-pandemic era. And that liquidity was prevalent with large corporations who were carrying tremendous cash on their balance sheet. And I think for most, we're putting it away for a rainy day. Private lending was up, and that has a $1.5 trillion market size at the end of 23 and $400 billion in dry powder. Private equity, from an equity perspective, had significant dry powder in the trillions. And with that liquidity, what we saw is that things that normally would have been tremendous bumps and led to both recessionary conditions as well as the wave of restructuring that I think many people were expecting was forestalled. Cash on the balance sheet gave lenders and continue to give lenders the ability to amend and extend when they think a midterm or a longer term future for a credit is better than writing everything off now. It's giving companies the ability to fund improvements, and it's given equity the ability to put money in to improve, make more efficient their portfolio companies as they have either sat on the sidelines not doing deals or been more choosy in the deals that they were doing. So looking back, In 2022, I did a panel. I was one of five people on a panel, and I was the only one on that panel who said I thought it wasn't going to be as bad as everyone was predicting. And they all pushed back hard. And my rationale for that is the same on a personal level. If you get laid off or you have a blip in your life and you have $10 in your bank account versus having $100,000 in your bank account, your options are dramatically different. Your outlook is very different. Your willingness to look down the road and see what you might do is very different. And I think that's what we saw in the economy. I think there were also a few points where things went better than expected. The market certainly rebounded quickly post-COVID. We saw a number of supportive lending, I'll call it techniques, that we did not see in 2008-09. That allowed borrowers time to either work out or time to find new lenders. And at the end of the day, when there's liquidity and there's cooperation, what we see is an extension of time on problems that would otherwise be very immediate. And I think that's what we've seen all through 2023. And I think we're still seeing it into 2024. Mm-hmm. That said, and I think this is important, restructuring has not fallen off a cliff. The economy is still not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And when we look at 23, it was a reasonably strong year by any metric, not just by a 2021 metric. And 24 will probably be similar. Yes, there is dry powder, but I still think that what we're looking at is more of a slow rising tide rather than a wave crashing.
Okay. And then kind of alongside that slow rising tide that you mentioned, there are, of course, some industries where we're seeing restructuring activity maybe pick up more than across the market despite available liquidity. I think some of those being in tech, healthcare, cannabis. Beginning with tech, I'm interested in your thoughts on kind of what the story is there and what has caused some of the scaling issues that we've seen in this space over the last few years.
Technology is an interesting industry because everyone always assumes that it's going to grow at exponential rates. And as a result, willingness to pay high multiples, willingness, and in fact, eagerness to lever up are fairly prevalent when private equity buys technology or when technology is transacting. As a result, many transactions were done in the early 21 into 20, early 22 timeframe, and rates were low, significantly lower than they are today. And as a result, overlevering with money that was almost free is a very different picture for debt service than when interest rates virtually doubled. So what we have seen in the tech sector is a tremendous rise in debt service, and I would say a middling performance in terms of associated rise in revenue. Now, there are always exceptions. And if you look at the Magnificent Seven in the stock market, the majority of them are tech companies. However, I think for more mainstream technology, we are seeing leverage that hurts. We are seeing revenue that is not as high as anticipated. And we are seeing private equity struggle with deals that 2 years ago, 4 years ago, probably would have been a no-brainer. As an example, one company that I worked with had EBITDA of between 550 and 650, 650 million in revenue in EBITDA. And you would think that would be more than sufficient, except debt service went from when the leverage was placed on the company in the low 200s to close to 550 million in revenue in debt service. And as a result, the company is struggling from a liquidity standpoint. Now, every company that I have ever worked with can always be more efficient, can always find ways to drive revenue better or optimize costs better or make their people, processes, and systems better. But I think in the tech sector, what we're seeing is largely a result of revenue that is not keeping pace with the growth in leverage as a result of rising rates. With regard to commercial real estate, I think everyone is aware that commercial real estate took a huge hit when the work from home movement started at the beginning of COVID, and in many cases still has not rebounded. The Class A space has mostly come back because many of the large firms are now requiring employees to be back in the office 3 days a week. And surrounding businesses that have real estate are also thereby doing better. However, the Class B and C buildings are still struggling. I spoke with one lender the other day who said he had a building that 2 years ago was worth appraised at $100 million and 2 months ago was appraised at 27. And when I asked him, well, what are you planning to do with it? He said, I don't want the keys to it. And he said, I think many lenders feel that way. And we have cash on our balance sheet, which goes back to the liquidity issue I mentioned earlier. And so we're going to sit for a while. We'll hold it for a while and see if the valuations recover. They may go back to 80 million. We don't expect 100, but 80 is a lot better than 27. So when we look at commercial real estate, everyone is expecting that the maturity walls that are coming in 24 and 25 are going to be substantial. But as long as there is liquidity in the market that either has to be put to work or can be patient capital, I think we will see a continuing amend and extend for that sector. With healthcare, which I think is probably the most concerning industry right now, my personal view is that the system is broken. Reimbursement rates are down. Costs, particularly skilled nursing costs, are up. And you can't have any business where revenues are declining and costs are rising. When I think about healthcare as a whole, it's really many different subsectors, whether it's hospitals, senior living, dental, behavioral health, equipment, even life sciences rolls under healthcare. And all of them face different challenges, but the common theme is that the private payor insurance system is creating what is mostly a catastrophic coverage situation. Doctors are opting out. The gap between those who have and those who don't, and those who have access and those who don't, is growing. And that leaves systems who do take private insurance and or systems dependent on Medicaid and Medicare, where either there are resource-challenged communities and demographics or elderly populations, really struggling because the Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rates continue to either remain flat, grow at a pace that isn't keeping pace with the cost of living and the increase in costs, or actually declining. And that affects almost every sector of provider-based care. And the last one I think that we've been watching carefully is cannabis. Cannabis cannot restructure federally. It can't take advantage of Chapter 11 or Subchapter 5 because it is not legal at the federal level. And as a result, the industry, when struggling, has to find alternative ways to work out. They also have a liquidity constraint because they can only take money that is not from federal banks or where the private lenders are not funded by federal banks. So they have an additional challenge. First of all, it's a new and burgeoning industry. So you see a lot of mom and pop management. That in and of itself creates challenges in any industry where the majority of players are mom and pop. It's simply not a professionalized industry just yet. Secondly, in addition to the liquidity challenges, you've got agricultural issues. And weather, the vagaries of weather and growing are challenging to any agricultural developer, whether you're growing fruit or you're growing wheat. Cannabis is the same thing. It needs conditions to grow. So if growing outside, weather becomes a factor, and those factors are not necessarily controllable. And then as the industry grows, scaling has been a challenge, both from a capital perspective as well as from an operations perspective. So for a variety of different reasons, I think healthcare, tech, commercial real estate, cannabis. And then I think the last one that we're keeping an eye on at FTI is consumer goods and retail. After a period of extended boom and pent-up demand and people buying from home, we are seeing a drop in consumer spending and a rise in retail distress. So that one is to be determined as we move forward. But right now, as we sit in Q1 of 24, those are the industries that we're keeping an eye on.
Thank you for that. That was a very thorough overview of all of those industries. So grounding us a little bit more in your day-to-day, I'd love to hear how you or even FTI more broadly has kind of tailored its firm strategies to align with some of those more unique needs of names and companies that might be going under across some of the industries that we've discussed so far.
From a personal perspective, I have always spanned the gamut between performance improvement, transactions, and turnarounds and restructuring. And as a result, when the economy is a bit better and companies are thinking about how to improve themselves, I focus more on performance improvement and transactions. When the economy is worse and there is significantly more distress, my work focuses much more around restructuring. And the way I think about it is taking companies from bad to better, which is the restructuring part, from better to good, which is the performance improvement part, and then from good to great, to borrow a phrase from Jim Collins, which is the business transformation part. And I think that mirrors what FTI as a whole has been doing. We've always been very, very strong and known for our restructuring services. But even within the restructuring world, we are diversifying our offerings. One specific example would be lender services, which was started not that long ago to provide support to lenders with credits that they were either monitoring or thinking about putting into workout or had put into workout that needed a workout. And that group has grown dramatically over the last number of years and has actually been responsible for a lot of the growth within our restructuring platform. Additionally, we have over the last many years diversified into services that include that better to good, including strategic communications for both healthy companies as well as distressed companies, including reputation management, transaction support, merger and integration support as part of that, including the ability to help companies with pre-deal planning and post-deal integration. And then Office of the CFO, which focuses on finance transformation for companies in that better to good and good to great. And then our digital offerings, which we are coalescing around, including AI, which I think have tremendous potential to help support the market as we look at AI's burgeoning influence. I feel like I'm back in the late 90s when the internet was starting to be a thing, but nobody quite understood what it was, but understood they needed to be a part of it and they needed to use it. I feel like I'm watching, you know, version two of that happening with AI. So certainly my practice supports an economy that swings from relatively good to not good at all. And FTI for many years has worked on providing a diversified portfolio of services to, again, take companies from bad to better, better to good, and good to great.
All right. So, okay. Thank you for that overview. And then for one more question for you today. So for industries where liquidity has been a little bit harder to tap into, a lot of companies have obviously gotten creative in terms of liability managements, pursuing everything from the use of securitization structured around assets to these double dip financings to create these sophisticated, very complex capital structures. How do you kind of foresee this trend evolving into 2024, especially if restructuring slow down as you project?
I think the LME trend is going to continue. And I think it reflects necessity being the mother of invention. These are mostly structures that are being pushed by private equity under duress when companies do not have the liquidity they need and they are seeking ways to create more liquidity. These are smart people finding opportunities within the existing credit agreements that are legal, although numerous lenders have challenged the legality of it. But it appears that the credit agreements allow for what is being done. And people have called it lender-on-lender violence. They have called it double dipping. They've called it up tiering. In my view, it is yet another workout strategy to be able to protect a company when liquidity is constrained and options are very few. So I expect the trend to continue. And I expect that there will be ever more creative ways, although I do expect lenders will continue to challenge it. Surprisingly, mostly they have accepted it. I think because if looking at the credit agreements, as I said, these are legal mechanisms, not mechanisms that are out of scope for what was agreed to.
Yeah, well, it'll be exciting to see how we talk about 2024 come this time next year. Thank you so much, Cynthia. It was a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Dia, to you and REORG. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you again for tuning into the REORG Primary Review. Find all our podcasts on the REORG.com webinars and podcast page, as well as Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Amazon. Take care and see you all next week.